Resolute Square.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which was rather extensive and continually being updated.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
No, it's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List.
Our guest today on The Enemies List is Jonathan Martin of Politico. You have seen and read Jonathan everywhere, but at Politico, it seems like his natural stomping ground because he is one of the most deeply knowledgeable people about the American political process. And I'm so glad to have him on the show today because we are really in a fascinating moment, both in the presidential campaign and in the way that the Senate is going to be very fundamentally reformatted, and the days are going to unfold very quickly as Mitch McConnell steps down. So, Jonathan, thank you for being on the program today. I wanted to launch right into the big question that I've been curious about, because I think you and I have both been sort of longtime students of Mitch McConnell and observers of Mitch McConnell. And the most fascinating thing anybody ever said to me was I had a weird conversation one time with Harry Reid in 2020, and he said, Mitch is probably the best there ever was in the minority since, of anybody, and probably rivaling LBJ. And I was like, Harry Reid thinks this? Then Harry Reid, it's a pretty high bar. So talk us a little bit about what McConnell's tenure meant and what his departure means for the Senate.
Well, he was the last living link to the Reagan era of Republican politics. He literally was elected to the Senate in 1984 on Reagan's coattails, the year Reagan won 49 states and McConnell was able to defeat an incumbent in Kentucky and never lost again. And he reflects a Reaganism, internationalist on foreign policy, more of a kind of Wall Street Journal editorial board figure when it comes to domestic policy, sort of traditional mainstream conservative. And I think it's been increasingly difficult for him, not just the obvious, the sort of the Trump factor, but the broader drift in the party, both on foreign and domestic policy, away from the kind of Reagan gospel. And he's tried to sort of be standing in the guy standing in the breach. And, he's done so for a few years now. But it's hard to be a leader when nobody's following you. And increasingly, there are fewer folks in the Senate who are following him, Rick, in part because who's been elected the last three or four cycles. And I think that is going to shape at least the sort of last part of his legacy, is what has happened to the Senate GOP in recent years. And then the fact is, it's gotten closer to the House. It's much Trumpier now.
That's sort of the next question is, we see the Johns, the various Johns all wanting it. We see Trump mentioning Steve Daines recently as a good guy. But none of these guys on the normie side, of which I would put Thune and Cornyn mostly, and maybe Barrasso with a foot in either camp. Do you think there's a world where two guys as seemingly normal as Cornyn and Thune have a shot at this?
It's a great question. And my shorthand on the succession question is, if Trump loses, I think Thune has the advantage. I think Thune probably has the vote if Trump loses. If you're talking about a kind of post-Trump, at least sort of active post-Trump moment, I think Thune probably wins. If Trump wins, I think this is a much more complicated question, because Trump's going to want to have an ally leading the House and Senate. He's going to want to have really reliable figures, basically yes men, in charge of both chambers. And he's going to know that Thune and Cornyn are not that. So does he go and try to convince a Daines or somebody like that to do it? That to me, and he already is encouraging Daines to do it. And look, if Daines can pull off what Rick Scott couldn't a couple of years ago, which is you use the NRSC to win back the majority and then use that as the springboard to run for leader. If Daines can sort of do that and you win 3 to 4 seats, pick up the majority, and then Trump is for you and Trump's won and is the president-elect, that could give him a real advantage in this race. A couple of questions. First, does Daines want it, which I think is still unclear. Second of all, if Trump wins in the kind of normie caucus in the Senate is looking at the restoration of Donald Trump, is that going to make them more inclined to have somebody that can at least offer some independence, or are they going to bow to the Trump preference?
It does seem interesting to me that, you know, that with McConnell, he could sit down with any member. He may not have liked all of them, but he could sit down with anybody from a Ted Cruz to a Susan Collins. Do any of these guys have that? I mean, maybe Thune, but...
Yeah, I think Thune probably is the best position today because generationally, you know, he's only 61, maybe 62. So he's still sort of close to the folks in their 50s and even their 40s and knows a lot of them well. You know, he's from a part of the country, Rick, and this is important when it comes to the Senate, you know, caucus math, is surrounded by Republicans almost entirely. And so, you know, the Plains obviously will deliver him a lot of votes just because they're his neighbors and friends. And, you know, I think he's in pretty good shape with the conservatives. Not all of them, but I think a lot of them. But again, if Trump can push Daines into this, and Daines is coming off a cycle where he wins, you know, three or four seats, and Daines says to the normies, look, I'm the best you're going to get. And, you know, do you want Trump to put Vance or Holly up instead of me? And then Daines can say to the Trump crowd, you know, I'm a Trump guy. And, you know, you could see that potentially being formidable if the Senate Republicans do bow to Trump and sort of if Daines really does have a good cycle.
I had a Senate chief of staff make a point to me, a former Senate chief of staff, excuse me, make a point to me this morning that there's an argument that you're not seeing the Cruz, Lee, Hawley, Cotton wing standing up for this office because they're just happier complaining and that the work is too hard.
Of course. What's the fun in actually having to make decisions and anger people, right? More fun to be in the balcony throwing tomatoes on stage. You know, you don't have to actually have any responsibility. You don't have to make any decisions. I mean, just ask Mike Johnson about that, right?
Right.
It's a different story when you're sitting in that big chair.
Well, you know, speaking of Mike Johnson, the Senate has a pretty good map this year. It still looks very favorable for the Republicans. This is that every 12-year really good map for the really, really good map for the Republicans. But the House is not looking quite so salubrious for the GOP right now. How well is Mike Johnson sleeping lately?
I don't think he's sleeping very well because he has a thankless job. And speaking of people that don't want to be led, oh my gosh, that is a difficult task. Yeah, look, I mean, I think the shorthand on this is the Senate likely to flip to the Republicans and the House likely to flip to the Democrats. I think the Senate probably a safer bet than the House. But certainly, given those 18 districts that Biden captured, that are in the hands of GOP lawmakers, you know, they don't have to win that many seats to flip this, basically three seat majority. So, I think Johnson was obviously a stopgap speaker. This was sort of done in a rush. It's, you know, bumpy to be charitable about it. And if he loses the majority, I cannot see a scenario where he would still lead the GOP conference next year.
Support for Rick Wilson's The Enemies List comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Wilson. That's odoo.com/Wilson. Odoo. Modern management made simple. All the increasing incentives for more chaos are there. And in the minority, they will become even more, I think, exacerbated and deranged.
These guys would prefer to be in the minority, a lot of them, right? They're much more comfortable being oppositional figures.
Absolutely.
Than, you know, constructive figures, because all the incentives media, financial, and otherwise, are geared toward being oppositional, right?
The hamster wheel of fundraising, the hamster wheel of going on Fox, they're always trying to, you know, outdo the last outrage. And so it's a
yeah, they're not getting on Fox primetime when they're putting together a bipartisan coalition to get some bill through the Financial Services Committee,
right.
Dealing with, you know, regional credit unions. And come on, you know, that's not cutting any ice, you know.
Yeah, none of it seems to have much zhuzh. So I want to move on to the presidential race for a few minutes, because, you know, we are now entering the end of the beginning with the Republican primary. We've got Super Tuesday coming up quickly, and at that point, while the mathematical inevitability doesn't flip until the 19th, I believe, we're pretty much done. How long do you think Nikki keeps cashing checks from billionaires to go out and just keep poking them in the eye?
Boy, the fundraising is extraordinary.
Isn't it?
Did you see how much she raised in February?
It's crazy.
But it is incredible, the cash that's out there, that for what is now a zombie candidacy. Nobody thinks, even her campaign knows it's not a real candidacy, but boy, the money keeps flowing. And it's such a reveal. If you want to put this in sort of Marxian terms, there's the capital and there's labor, right? And the capital wing of the Republican Party just cannot stand Trump. They'll eventually support him in the general, most of them will, but they don't want to take that pill right now. They just refuse to swallow it, and they'll keep giving her money to send a message. And it has totally flipped the traditional endgame of a presidential primary, Rick, because, you know, the old line is they never ran. They just run out of money. Well, they don't run out of money when you're running as a Republican against Trump, because the capital wing of the party is for you until you say no. There's no, like, natural end of political life to her primary, right? It's like she's going to have to decide this because she'll have the money to stay in. And so that's a long way of saying, like, let's see what she does Super Tuesday. My sense is that if she can get enough votes and delegates to be able to then, you know, put away a lot of the money she has, because, by the way, if you look at the buys, I don't think she's that aggressive right now.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, they are
not in Michigan, certainly.
No.
And so I think she's pocketing this money. And I think if she does well enough on Tuesday, Rick, she wants to be able to say, I got X million votes, uh-huh. X delegates, I was the last person standing, and then walk away with a huge, huge war chest. And, you know, Texas and California alone on Tuesday are going to give her the opportunity to build up a trove of votes.
I think she's making a solid bet on it, honestly. I think it's a solid bet here to keep playing this out, keep hitting Trump in the nose, but while also, and she's also throwing the Republican base enough, like, well, Biden's too old, but so is Trump, sort of framing. I think she's playing her 2028 game more than anything else right now.
Totally. No, it's so obvious that she's, this is all a framing exercise for her now. And, you know, she's enough of a conventional politician where you can see the hamster wheel turning, right? It's like, okay, I have to hit Biden to a certain degree because I can't be framed as never Trump, because that'll slow the money and the Wall Street Journal crowd won't like that. So I have to hit Biden hard. And so she has this formulation about, I'm very worried about Biden and I have some doubts about Trump. And you know, calling Biden the socialist Democrat. It's so interesting. And it's all aimed at retaining her future viability in the system, to borrow the famous Bill Clinton line about the draft, right? She wants to retain viability with Team Red. And her play is 28 or 32, whenever the party wants to wake up and go to rehab and kick the Trump habit. Rick, the problem is the party doesn't want to kick the habit.
The only predicate that's mistaken in this whole thing is the people that want that are the never Trumpers like me, who could sit around a Waffle House right. table, and yes. the money guys in private equity, and
yes, who keep giving her checks. Yes, exactly.
The rest of the party out there in the country, you know, they're like, oh my God, if only Ron DeSantis had been more conservative and right wing, we could have supported him. You know, they're not going back to Bush.
No, and that's the whole issue, right? The capital wing of the party's with her, mm-hmm. but there's more folks in the labor wing of the party in the rank and file.
So
and they don't want to go back to the old days, all right? They like the dog food, all right? They don't want to be told that the dog food is fattening and bad for them and has side effects, all right? They find it quite tasty, and they're going to keep eating it. And here's the issue. You know, Democrats lost three consecutive presidentials in the 80s by considerable margins. You know, Trump's never going to lose by any kind of a margin. Even if Trump loses this fall, Rick, it'll be narrowly because the country is so damn divided. So the idea that like the Republican Party is going to wake up after Election Day and say, you know what? It turns out all those guys were right. Trump is actually a loser, and we should totally go back
never
to like
happening.
James A. Baker III.
Yep.
I mean, give me a break, right? It's not going to happen.
Never, never, ever going to happen. It is, you know, as one of the anthropologists of my former party, I have studied it professionally and philosophically and anecdotally and as a writer, and there is nothing, there's no sign at the base of the party that there is anything moving away from Trump.
They'll never blame Trump. They'll blame the media, uh-huh. the legal system, Democrats. It's never going to be his fault. You know the old line about communism? Real communism has never actually been tried. Yes. And that'll be the thing with Trump is like, you know, it was never actually tried because the media, DOJ, Democrats, what have you. And so, you know, he wasn't to blame, right? So
the portfolio of excuses they have for Trump's failures is striking. You mentioned the DOJ and all the legal exposure Trump has right now, and I've spent a year telling Democratic donors and operatives, do not count on these cases to take Trump out, either procedurally or politically, because they're just
right.
not
well,
going
boy,
to.
You were prophetic there, huh?
And Jesus. My worst prophecy ever that I got so much crap for, in November of 21, I said, look, it's going to be Trump and Biden again. Everybody should just settle down and get ready for it. And people were so mad at me, left, right, and center. They're like, stop saying that. But it is.
No, I recall well.
I think I said it in Politico. I saw you on a plane one morning out of Tallahassee, and I said, DeSantis is an overpriced stock. It's not going to happen.
It ain't happening. Exactly.
So we do have all these cases hanging over him right now. And I think the normal people are sort of, you know, confused by the amount of data about the cases. They're unable to process like how big this whole thing is and why it's all happening, what's all happening. My question for you is this. Trump got a big boost in the primary and in the base in the beginning of the primary season by these cases hitting him. And it solidified the base around him again. It took the wind out of DeSantis and everybody else pretty much. Do you think there's any political blowback on the money cases, the rape cases, the J6 cases that hasn't been processed into the brains of American politics yet?
Not at this point. I don't. I mean, I think you're going to have a fresh conviction and probably in the documents or the January 6th case to move anybody. And I think even then it's difficult. I try to tell Democrats this all the time when they complain about the press coverages. People have eyes wide open about Donald Trump. They know who he is, okay? They don't care. They get the deal, okay? And it's not like they're going to wake up one day and realize, oh my God, you tell me Donald Trump's a bad guy? I had no idea. Like, they don't give a damn. And him cheating on his wife with a porn star, it's humiliating for, you know, many parties involved. But the voters know it. It's priced in, exactly. So I'm just not sure. Now, you get a conviction in D.C. on trying to overturn the election, and then Trump lashes out at the jury and the judge in really nasty ways, I think that actually could, at least at the margins, have some impact.
Yeah, that's one I keep my eyes on more than the rest because it does have.
But when does that happen, Rick? Is that October or is it after, you know? So
that I was going to ask you that question next. Is do you think there's a world where the extraordinarily cautious Merrick Garland doesn't get on the phone to Jack Smith at some point in the summer and say, well, look, he's the Republican nominee. I think we're at the end of our rope. You did a good job. Sorry it didn't work out.
Oh, can you imagine the backlash? Oh, my gosh, right?
I don't think Garland has any good options personally.
Congressional Democrats are already pissed enough at him. I mean, he picked that wound a little bit, and they oh, it's incredible, right?
After all we did for him.
Yes, exactly. So is Smith going to pursue that case in October? I mean, I'm like, God, can you imagine what a circus that would be? It would make the OJ trial look like, you know, Okaloosa County Traffic Court.
Where Matt Gaetz spends quite a bit of time. I think in a lot of the media, the cases are great coverage because they're procedural. It gives people something to do every night on TV.
Rick, for the same reason, OJ was great cable fodder too, right? You know, we have legal expert, you know, Tom Jones and Susan Franklin here to break down and what just happened. Oh, it's a dream for cable. Who the hell, you know, John Q. Voter in Scottsdale or Marietta is like riveted by that and saying, yeah, it turns out Trump really, really did a dirty thing and I'm going to vote against him now.
It is. It's crazy. Well, Jonathan, as we start to wrap up here, let me ask you a question. What is a story that people should be paying more attention to right now in the political scene that is getting under?
I think the Bobby Kennedy story, Rick. I think people who follow politics closely, like we do and like your listeners do, I think don't appreciate the sort of penetration that Kennedy is getting with what I would call sort of civilians, people who just don't follow politics that closely and who are finding him through TikTok in a lot of cases or other forms of social media. A lot of them are younger voters. A lot of them don't know who his family even is. Who really have no faith in the system, deeply, deeply skeptical of any institutions. I think, I don't know if he keeps 9%, but let's say he gets 4.5% to 5%. That is so many votes in these battleground states. So I think Kennedy in general, and then specifically, Rick, is he going to get on the libertarian line? Is Jill Stein going to get on the green line in these states? I think that is so consequential for this fall.
Stein is already a proven disruptive effect, you know, in 2016. And I think Kennedy has a weird, I don't know how to score it yet. I kind of score it like, I think he takes 2 out of 5 votes from Joe Biden, but he might take more out of Trump by a fraction because of the crypto, anti-vax, all the weirdness.
And maybe they weren't even going to vote at all, right? So it, you know, it could be from scratch too. So it is a fascinating cycle. But you know, look, part of the reason why Biden won in 2020 was effectively a head-to-head race that 2016 wasn't. You know, and that matters. That matters. So
yeah, I think so too. Well, Jonathan Martin, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Enemies List today. I really appreciate your insights as always. Look forward to having you back on the show as we go through the rest of this insane election year.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me, Rick. Good to hear your voice.
On today's Enemies List, the Senate Republicans, who must be the most politically tone-deaf organization in the known universe right now. You know, last week when the Supreme Court in Alabama banned IVF and said in vitro fertilization was against the rules of God, the country was rightly shocked and repulsed and saddened and disgusted. And so within minutes, the National Republican Senatorial Committee got their pollster to write a quick memo and sent it out to every Republican out there saying, oh my God, this issue is deadly. Run like hell. Don't say you're against IVF because IVF is extraordinarily popular. It's a deeply emotional, painful subject for Americans. Oh my God, don't do this. Within 3 days, on Wednesday of this week, the Republicans had an opportunity to vote for a bill protecting in vitro fertilization from these crazy election law or these crazy abortion laws in the states. And you know what they did? Led by Cindy Hyde Smith, the Mississippi Meemaw of the Republican Party, they voted against a bill that would protect IVF. As somebody who wants to see them burn to the ground right now, I'm fine with them doing that. Because politically, it's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. And I've been around long enough to see a lot of dumb crap in politics. But I'm going to tell you something. These people who did this, they are going to pay a political price. They have done something that is so incredibly, excessively, unbelievably unnecessary, cruel, vicious, and anti-life. These people say they're pro-life. IVF gives life. IVF is a way for parents, for moms and dads who are desperate for children to go through a painful, difficult, stressful, costly, unbelievably hard process so they can have a family. And the people that want to deny them that, whether it's the Alabama Supreme Court or the Republican Senate, are on the enemy's list.
Thanks again for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.